Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiram Vanachari. Yamuna Tiram Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiri Vadidhari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiri Vadidhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiram Vanachari. Yamuna Tiram Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiri Vadidhari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiri Vadidhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiram Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiri Vadidhari.
Gaur Premanandi, Hari 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 Go. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you all for being here. A real pleasure to be with you. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Praeshva Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Reading this morning from Canto 8, Chapter 5, Verse 21. Yeah. Aham bhavo yuyamato saradayo. Manusya tiryag drumagharma jatayam. Yasyavataram sakala visarjita. Vrajama sarve sharanam tamavyayam. Aham bhava yuyam ato sharadayo. Manushya tiryag dhruma gharma jataya. Yasyavataram shakala visarjita. Vrajama sarve sharanam tamavyayam. Please chant. Aham bhavo yuyam atos shradayo. Dhruva karma jataya. Yasyavataram sakala visarjita. Vrajama sarve sharanam tamavyayam. Aham bhavo yuyam ato saradayo. Manusya tirya drumagarma jatayam. Yasyavatarasya kalabhitartitam. Vrajama sarve sharanam tamavyayam. Aham bhavo yuyam ato saradayo. Manusya tirya dhruma gharma jatayam. Yasyavataram sakala visarjita. Namjito yuyam ato saradayo. Manushya tiryag dhruma karma jatayam. Yasyavataram sakala visarjita. Vrajama sarve sharanam tamavyayam. Anyone else? Aham bhavo yuyam ato saradaya. Manusya tiryag dhruma karma jataya. Yasyavataram sakala visarjita. Vrajama sarve saranam vyayam. Very beautiful verse. Let's read the synonyms. Aham, I, Bhava, Lord Shiva, Yuyam, all of you demigods, Ato, as well as Asura Adayam, demons and others, Manushya, the human beings, Tiryat, the animals, Dhruma, the trees and plants, Karma Jataya, as well as the insects and germs born of perspiration. Yasya, of whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Avataram, of the Purusha incarnation, Angsa, of his part and parcel, the guna avatar, Brahma, Kala, of Brahma's sons, Visarjitam, produced by the generation. Brajamam, we shall go. Sarve, all of us. Sharanam, unto the shelter. Tam, unto the supreme. Avyayam, the inexhaustible. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma said, and he's, by the way, he's speaking to whom? Who's come to ask Lord Brahma for help? Yes, Indra, Varuna, all the demigods have been beaten back, so they've come to ask Lord Brahma for help. And he says, in seeing their difficult condition, he says, I, Lord Shiva, all of you demigods, the demons, the living entities born of perspiration, the living beings born of eggs, the trees and plants sprouting from the earth, and the living entities born from embryos, all come from the Supreme Lord, from his incarnation of Rajaguna, that is, Lord Brahma himself, the Guna avatar, and from the great sages, rishis, who are part of me. Let us therefore go to the Supreme Lord and take shelter of his lotus feet. Purport. Some creatures are born from embryos, some from perspiration, and some from seeds. In this way, all living entities emanate from the guna avatar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ultimately, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the shelter of all living entities. So this is a very humble statement by Lord Brahma. It's very tactful, you know, how he's speaking in the third person. So they've all come to him for help, but he's not saying, oh, yes, I will help you. I will be your shelter. I will take care of you. But he says, I and all, Lord Shiva and all of you and every living entity, then he goes through all these different categories, have come from Krishna. But they've come through the agency of his Rajaguna avatar, the guna avatar for creation. And who is that person? Lord Brahma, yeah. So he, again, very humbly, he's saying, well, they're coming from the Rajaguna avatar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He could just say, well, everyone's coming from me or from the rishis that I have created. But he's speaking humbly in the third person, talking about himself abstractly, so that what? He can give focus to Krishna. So he has this very important part in creation. Let's consider here, this is a very early stage in the history of the universe at this past time. And when Lord Brahma, you know, the Bhagavatam in the second canto begins with Lord Brahma awakening on this lotus flower, not knowing what's going on, hearing these two syllables. What two syllables? Tapa, right, austerity. So he meditates for thousands of years, and then he has this beautiful realization of Krishna in the spiritual world. And he sees Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna comes over to him and does what? You remember? He shakes his hand, yes. Good to see you. Where are you coming in from? Yes, he shakes his hand, and then he instructs him in the essence of Krishna consciousness, the four seed verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Aham evasam evagre. Everything comes from me. Whatever you see which is separate from me, know that to be my illusory energy. And all self-realization, all search for truth leads up to this point. See? So this is really important in Lord Brahma's evolution. He's been searching for the truth, then he meditates, he sees Krishna, and then Krishna says, yes, this is the essence of the truth. When you understand that whatever you see that is without relation to me is my illusory energy. So having heard all this, Lord Brahma then goes on with his job, which constitutes a great deal of the early cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. What is his business now in this empty universe? He's supposed to fill it up, right? And so he creates these various prajapatis, the first ones being the four Kumaras, and he wants them to help him fill up the universe. But they say, no, we're going to stay brahmachari. And he gets angry. And who comes out of his head then? Lord Shiva, Rudra. Yes. And but then these various prajapatis are manifest, as he mentions here, the rishis who are part of me, Bhrigu and others, they come from him and they take the responsibility of filling up the universe with population. So this is pretty much the business of what's going on, isn't it? The history of the Bhagavatam is all about this, filling up the universe with population. So Lord Brahma has had a hand. And by the way, some of these prajapatis, like Daksha. Daksha means what? Expert. Yes, he's so expert at his job that he can procreate not only human beings, but all these other species. All kinds of bodies, all kinds of situations for various living entities coming into the material world to find shelter according to their karma. So all of the life is coming from Brahma. And this is how he begins his help for the demigods. Now, as I read this, I can't help but think of the political parties, all of whom say, we're the inclusive party for everybody. You know, whether you're this or that type of person, come under our tent. They call it the big tent. You know, because in a democracy, every vote counts. So you don't want to alienate people. You want to include them. No, we're the ones who are going to help you. We're the ones who are going to help you. See, but who is as inclusive as Lord Brahma? See, they're only appealing to human beings and those who can vote. But here Lord Brahma is the real big tent, every living entity. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarva yoneshu kunteya murtaya sambhavanti ya tasmad brahma aham yodir aham bija prada pita. I am the seed-giving father of all living entities. So everyone is connected with Krishna. In that regard, I'd like to speak for a moment about cockroaches. You know, cockroaches, according to science, are the true proprietors of the earth. Because when human beings blow each other to smithereens, the cockroaches will come out and continue their life. See? So the cockroach is also, I mean, let's look at it like this. When, before you understood Krishna consciousness, what did you think when you saw a cockroach? What? Can you tell us, Sri Rupa? Would you scream? By the way, when cockroaches walk on human beings, science has found, when they contact human beings, they go and wash themselves. And human beings also, they seem to be harbingers of disease. They're indicative of unsanitary conditions. You know, so the intuition is, just let me squash it. Get rid of this horrible, ugly creature, right? But then we become a little educated in spiritual life, and we understand, sarva yoneshu kunteya. This living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. There is life in this roach that I cannot replace. So, and I have not created, so I have no right to take it away. So we might take the roach and put it in a cup and throw it out at the Baptist Center or whatever, you know, throw it outside. Because we have come to develop a little spiritual understanding. And as Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita in the sixth chapter, when one's even more advanced, fifth chapter, one's even more advanced, then one will see that living entity in the cockroach body with great compassion. This is a jiva who has, by some terrible karma, been ensconced in a body which has just a miserable existence, crawling around filth, hiding, no capacity for reason, for understanding the situation that it's in. Yeah. So such a a terrible birth. All bodies, by the way, if you look at them, are perverted reflections of the human form, which of course is Krishna's form. There's arms, there's legs, there's eyes. You know, all of these, all of the elements of Krishna's body exist in some twisted way in all of these various species of life. Even the tree is described in the Vedic literature as one who drinks through his feet. So the brooch becomes the object actually of compassion for the truly advanced soul. Now, before we go on, I want to mention that science has a tremendous, exciting new discovery. Would you like to hear it? A certain species of cockroach produces milk for its larvae. And that milk, science has now discovered, has more protein per calorie than any other known source of food. So coming soon to a supermarket near you, roach milk. They're testing to see if is it toxic for human beings in any way. So, all glories to science. All living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels. This is Lord Brahma's humble statement. Therefore, all living entities turn to Krishna in times of distress if they are properly educated. This is Lord Brahma's initial response to the demigods. Any comments on this much? Any questions, reflections? Okay, so we'll read the next verse, this continuing conversation. After this introduction, Lord Brahma goes on to say, "For the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no one to be killed, no one to be protected, no one to be neglected, and no one to be worshipped. Nonetheless, for the sake of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, according to time, he accepts different forms as incarnations, either in the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, or the mode of ignorance." Purport. This verse explains that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is equal to everyone. This is confirmed himself by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita. Samoham sarva-bhuteshu name dveshto stina priyaha ye bhajanti tu mam bhakya mayi te teshu chapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. This is chapter 9, verse 29. Although the Lord is impartial, he gives special attention to his devotees. Therefore, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya sadhuna vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapa nartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I advent myself millennium after millennium. The Lord has nothing to do with anyone's protection or destruction, but for the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this material world, he apparently has to act, either in goodness, in passion, or in darkness. Actually, however, he is unaffected by these modes of material nature. He is the Supreme Lord of everyone, as a king sometimes punishes or rewards someone to maintain law and order. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, although having nothing to do with the activities of this material world, sometimes appears as various incarnations according to the time, place, and object. First, Lord Brahma has said, Krishna is the origin of everyone. And then he says, although he's equal to everyone, he does appear according to the circumstances. So we could say he's equal to everyone, therefore he will just stay aloof. But because he's equal to everyone, he will, though he has no need to, he will appear for two purposes. What were those two purposes from the fourth chapter? To deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants. And to reestablish principles of religion, yes, which occurs simultaneously. So this is the contradictory nature of Krishna, that he In this verse, he appears to contradict himself. Samoham sarva bhuteshu, name dveshtasti na priyam. When I was 19 years old, I received first initiation from Srila Prabhupada, and a wonderful devotee named Vishnu John Swami was doing the fire yajna, and he spoke on this verse. So this verse is always very special to me. Samoham sarva bhuteshu. It appears to be an oxymoron. Do you know what an oxymoron is? What's an oxymoron? Yes, a self-contradictory statement, like legal ethics or military intelligence. Yeah. So this appears to be an oxymoronic statement. I'm equal to everyone, but I'm friends to my devotees. He seems to be contradicting himself in the same sentence, right? So how is this possible? How can Krishna simultaneously be equal to everyone and yet partial to his devotees? Can anyone explain? Mike?
Because he reciprocates equally with everyone, the devotees give affection to him, so that's why he's partial, but everyone else, they don't really directly interact with Krishna. So he doesn't directly interact with them.
Yes. In other words, he is, I can expand on that just a little. He reciprocates equally with everyone. Therefore, if someone wants nothing to do with Krishna, Krishna makes himself aloof from them. He makes himself singularly unappealing to them, because they don't want to see him. They don't want to have any connection with him. And Krishna reciprocates by making himself ugly. He's not hard up trying to get their attention. No, no, no. You know, they want to avoid him. He will step back and look completely uninteresting to them. And if somebody approaches him wanting a relationship, then he gives them also what they want. That is the loving reciprocation. So he's equal to everyone. If you don't want him, he'll reciprocate it. You want him, he'll reciprocate. And because the devotees want him, he's very partial to the devotees. So it's not that he is playing favorites. He's equal to everybody. And anybody can adjust their relationship with Krishna whenever they want. Right? That's our capacity. Krishna is ready to reciprocate or not. We have that free will, that choice. So this is how Krishna can be equal to everyone and yet partial to his devotees. Very nicely said in this verse, there is no one to be killed. Like Krishna has no agenda. There's no one to be protected. There's no one to be neglected and no one to be worshipped. No duality in Krishna's relationship. It's a singular, reciprocal willingness there to everybody. You know, this is the real fruit of Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita we read, Vidya Vinaya Sampani Brahmane Gavi Hashtani Sune Chaiva Swapake Cha Pandita Sama Darshinaha. The pandit is one who can see equally all kinds of different living entities. You know, the elephant, the dog eater, and the Brahmin, and the cow. You know, all living entities can be appreciated by one who's Krishna conscious. Just like we're talking about the roaches. This verse has an interesting reference to very low living entities, the Gama, what is it? Gama Jataya, Agarma Jataya, meaning that living entities born of perspiration. Now this is sort of a descriptive term. They're not actually born of perspiration, but they appear in perspiration. The bacteria, you know. Do you know human sweat has no odor? But the bacteria that live in human sweat make the pungent smell. So actually they make very healthy deodorants
that are simply mineral salts that make an inhospitable environment for those bacteria. So instead of trying to perfume or cover up or suppress the odor, they just the salt deodorants just very simply make the bacteria go somewhere else. So the low living entities also have a unique relationship with Krishna. This is how a person of knowledge sees. You know, vidya vinaya sampani. Even the tiny germs who have the worst karma, you know, the most difficult, ignorant lives, they are also Krishna's part and parcel. That's why the Bhagavad Gita talks about the fate of the demon being cast into these lower species of life, you know, having to go through all of this, all of these meaningless, ridiculous lives. They're not meaningless, they're just very slowly elevating one to, again, the human birth. That's a very lengthy process, you know, very lengthy process, and so much suffering involved. So now we have this knowledge. We need to see all living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels. Why is that so beneficial for our spiritual life? To see all living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels. Because then what? If we see like that? Well, we'll treat them properly, for one thing, yes. But who will we remember in all circumstances? Yeah, we'll always think of Krishna. Everyone we see, every life form, every moment, because life is everywhere. Sarvagya is, there's nowhere where life does not exist. Although, you know, with our human senses, we can only perceive a very limited sphere of living entities. But life is everywhere. So if we see all living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels, then as the Ishopanishad says, tatrako moha soka. What is there as illusion or anxiety for such a person? That is manifested immediately, though, in our transcending the bodily concept of life sufficiently so that we can see the difference between devotees and non-devotees. This is the difference between the Kanishta and the Madhyama Adhikari. Right? The Kanishta has no discrimination. No ability to tell who is advanced and who is not. We sometimes see when people take up Krishna consciousness and they suddenly realize the great beauty of it, they think, oh, all of these devotees are so amazing. You know, and then you get to know them and you see. Also, recovering sense gratification addicts. So Kanishta means no ability to discriminate, and therefore know what? What is the quality that the Madhyama Adhikari has that the Kanishta does not have? Steadiness Nishta. See, Kanishta, without firm faith. So the Madhyama Adhikari may not have full knowledge and realization, but they're unshakable in their faith because of their direct experience of Krishna consciousness. But the Kanishta is always thinking, oh, yes, okay, I like this kind of devotee, I don't like this kind of devotee, or just blindly, all the devotees are so advanced, and then all of a sudden somebody does something that disappoints us, and the Kanishta says, ah, these devotees are no good. See? The Madhyama has the ability to discriminate. Now, discrimination is a double-edged word, right? In ordinary society, discrimination is a bad thing. Discrimination against races, against gender, against nationalities is seen as an ignorant thing. But in spiritual terms, to discriminate who is actually advanced and who is not advanced, this means that one has to become sufficiently educated in what it means to be Krishna conscious. So that discrimination is necessary for teaching others. If one If you feel like somebody knows more than you or they're more elevated than you, how can you teach them? See? There has to be a sense of recognition, of reality. Okay, well, this person doesn't know something which I know, therefore let me help. Let me share with this person. Right? This is the compassion of the Madhyama Adhikari. But at the same time, a discriminating Madhyama Adhikari can see, like, this person is not interested, therefore I'm not going to, as the Bible says, cast pearls before swine. I'm not going to try to preach to this person. It's a ninth offense to the holy name, right? To try to preach to the faithless. Anyone ever seen Yam Niyam Das Brahmachari? Do you know who I'm talking about? You see, he's a very nice devotee named Akendra Prabhu who has this comedy act of the fanatic Brahmachari with a guitar, singing, rocking very hard for Krishna. So he sings one song about how he became a devotee. I won't try to recreate it, but he becomes a devotee and his parents are trying this way and that way to convince him not to be a devotee. Yeah, the 12 days of Krishna. They send him this book, anti-Krishna book, and they offer him a job and they send him nice food from home and one thing after the next. And finally the temple president says, look, why don't you just go see them? But when you go see them, be nice to them. Don't try to preach to them. So of course he said, yes, yes Prabhu, I will do that. So immediately he goes home and he's 18 chapters Gita, 16 rounds of japa, 15... gives him the whole thing. This is the Kanishta. Has anyone else ever experienced that? You try to preach to your parents or to your family and they just really like to hear it, right? No. No, that's the first mistake. So, again, this is the Kanishta. You can't tell the difference. Who's interested and who's not? Who is receptive and who doesn't want to hear it? So, we need to grow from Kanishta to Madhyama, where we can discriminate and present things appropriately. There is a very nice story in the Mahabharata about Duryodhana and Arjuna, the two principal disciples of Dronacharya. So these were the elders of these two groups of cousins, and Drona, who was teaching both of them the military arts, decided to see who was fit to rule. So he called Yudhisthira and said, I want you to go out today and find somebody who is inferior to you. Okay, and then you bring that person back to me. And then he said to Duryodhana, now I want you to go out today and find someone who is superior to you and bring that person back to me. So Duryodhana went out and after some hours he came back. He said, I looked everywhere. I couldn't find anyone superior to me. He's sort of the Donald Trump of the Mahabharata. And then Yudhisthira came back also without anybody. And Drona said, you couldn't find anyone? He said, well, I saw a man who was hitting a cow. Okay, here's somebody who's inferior to me. But then I followed him home, and I saw his wife was feeding him dinner. It was a kadashi, and he was feeding him a kadashi grains, and he was honoring a kadashi. So I said, no, he's worshipable. So he couldn't find anyone. So they both came back empty-handed, and Dronacharya said, so Yudhisthira, you are fit to rule the world. And Duryodhana, you are fit to be eaten by jackals. So, this is how we become Madhyama Adhikari. How to see Krishna in everyone. Everybody is worshipable, regardless of their karmic situation. That is the difference between the Madhyama and the Uttama and the Kanishta. Now, the Uttama is another thing. Yes, the Uttama Adhikari can also not discriminate, but that's more like Yudhisthira, feeling everybody is more advanced. How could I instruct anyone? Therefore, the Uttama Adhikari does not teach, but just worships Krishna within, in bhajan. And sometimes, as in the case of Srila Prabhupada, the Uttama Adhikari will descend to the second class platform, to to the Madhyama platform to teach, in order to teach. And our Sankirtan leader in Los Angeles used to, on Saturdays we'd have Maha Sankirtan Saturday. Everyone would go out and distribute books. So he would go around to everybody and say, Prabhu, could you descend to the second class platform today and go out for preaching? So the Madhyama Adhikari, this is our goal in Krishna consciousness. What are the other qualities of the Madhyama? How does the Madhyama discriminate? What are the various categories? Anyone remember? How does the Madhyama feel about the advanced devotees?
He serves them.
Yeah, serve. They want to hear from them. Yes, right. How about devotees on an equal level of advancement? Yes, he shares, make friends. What is it? Guhyam akyati prichchati. Inquire confidentially. Hear the other person confidentially. Yes, this is friendship. And how about for the less advanced? Yes, out of respect for them. And this is a very important word you use, very good word, respect. Respectfully teach Krishna consciousness, respecting this other person as a part and parcel of Krishna, and not only that, but a rare enlightened soul who's interested in Krishna consciousness. It's not like marine camp. Maggot! You know, you're my inferior and I'll give you some transcendental knowledge, you know. This is not the way to approach. No, who will listen? You know, Prabhupada said that, not like military camp. So instructing those who are less advanced is an act of compassion, not of pride. And how about the demons? How does the Madhyama deal with them? Yes, it avoids them. Just, you know, no comment. So Madhyama Adhikari is within our grasp. And this is our goal, to be able to relate with everybody appropriately according to their situation. Recently I went with some friends, some devotee friends, to visit an attorney. And so we talked with this attorney a little bit about our business. She was a Muslim woman. So we didn't think she'd have any interest in what we're all about. We're just talking about our business. And then when that part of our conversation was over and we're going to leave, I mentioned something about yoga. And she said, oh, I do yoga. So I just started asking her about her yoga practice and how she does it and where she does it and how long she's been doing it. And then we went into diet. It turns out she's largely vegetarian and she's this particular type of diet, and she was asking us, you know, what we eat, and then my friends have a big fruit orchard, so, and it turned out she was really desperate to find organic fruit, so my friend said, oh, we could bring you some fruit, you know? So all of this came about because we had a little interest, genuine interest in this other person. And she came over, and she took prasadam, and she learned about Krishna, and she had a very nice time. It was a very interesting exchange. It's a professional who can help us a lot, although she has no interest in our faith, ostensibly. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is described very nicely by Krishnadas Kaviraj, that the principles of religion are established not by logic and debate, but by the behavior of the devotees. So if we take a genuine interest in other people, although it appears to be tangential to Krishna consciousness, you know, we're not telling them about Bhagavad Gita. We just take a genuine interest in them. We show a little concern. We show a little curiosity. What are you all about? Although it may appear to be mundane, it actually is winning that person's heart for Krishna. One of my senior godbrothers used to tell us, sometimes you preach by not preaching. You know. Well, let me talk about Krishna. I don't care about you. Let me tell you what I'm into. See? The problem with that is everyone in the world is in that same state of mind. They're just not into Krishna, right? But everyone wants to lay their trip on us, market to us, convince us, persuade us, you know, or dump on us, right? Yeah, this is pretty much the condition of human society. Everybody's looking for somebody who will listen to them. But if devotees, what's the first process of bhakti? Of the nine processes, what's the first one? Yeah, hearing. So we should be a little practiced at that, right? So we just apply our tremendous skills in shravanam and hearing to the conditioned souls and just listen to them for a little while. Let them tell us about themselves. What's the natural outcome if somebody talks to you about themselves for a while? What generally happens if they're decent people? Yeah, after an hour or two of talking about themselves, they'll say, "And where are you from?" How did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu deal with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, this very esteemed senior pandit? You know, and here comes the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself as a sannyasi. And this learned pandit, the chief pandit of this holy place, Jagannath Puri, said, "Why have you've taken sannyas from a good lineage? Why do you hang out with fanatics? Come and I'll instruct you in Vedanta." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very submissively comes and he sits. And how did he deal with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? He just sat and listened to him for days and days and days. I'm going to digress for a moment. One of my friends is a professional motivational speaker, and he gives a motivational speech to the devotees every year at the Festival of Inspiration in New Vrindavan. So he does this professionally 200 times a year. He's in front of groups of people, you know, well-to-do, educated professionals, giving motivational talks. Then once a year, he does it for devotees. He said, "Devotees are the toughest audience." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because they just sit there impassively." Impassively. Other groups will reciprocate. They'll respond to what he's saying, but the devotees are like... And this is because we have mastered the art of looking like we're paying attention in Bhagavatam class. devotees should be good at hearing, right? We should be good at hearing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just sat there impassively for 7 days. Finally, what did Sarvabhauma say? What did he say to Chaitanya? What's that? Yes, you're just sitting there. Have you no questions? I think Sarvabhauma was thinking this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a little crazy. So you sit there like a dead stone, he said. And do you understand what I'm saying? And what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? Yes, what he said is, "I understand Vedanta perfectly, but your explanations are bewildering my mind." So Sarvabhauma says, "Well, then you explain." This is exactly where Chaitanya wanted him to go. See. Then when Lord Chaitanya explained Vedanta, Sarvabhauma could understand he had misunderstood the whole thing all of these years. So he immediately surrendered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the first approach is hearing. This, if we listen to people, this shows respect, right? This morning we're chanting the Shikshastakam. I don't know if you're aware, but the Shikshastakam covers the entire range of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So beautifully, in 8 verses. You know, first is Sambandha, glories to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart and extinguishes the fire of birth and death. And then, "Lord, you have so many names, and you've invested your power in all of them." It's all theory, until the last sentence, Nanuraga, and "I am so unfortunate, I have no taste for them." Now it's getting personal. Now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is showing us how to apply. So what is the next verse, which is the turning point between theory and application? Trinadapi sunichena, tororiva sahishnana. Even though I have no taste for the holy name, One can chant the holy name constantly if what? One feels oneself more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. That's the difference between the Kanishta and the Madhyama. Actually, reformed character. Really ready to offer all respects to every living entity. See? Then we can, what? Kirtaniya Sadahari. We can always be chanting. See? Even though we have no attraction for the holy name, if we just treat people respectfully, then we can gain an attraction for the holy name. Or at least we can perpetually chant and let that attraction develop. And that goes on to detachment, nadanam najanam nasundari. And then separation. Great humility, these symptoms of surrender and bhava. You know, first he describes the ecstatic symptoms, and then he experiences the ecstatic symptoms. And this is how the Shikshastakam concludes. See, so from theory to ecstasy, and everything in between in just 8 verses. Amazing, huh? But this third verse, Haridas Thakur said, the devotee should wear it as a locket around the neck. Trinadapi sunichena. So being respectful to others. If we're respectful to everyone in our life, we're acting on the Madhyama platform. If we're thinking that some are better, some are worse, then we're on the Kanishta platform. You know, as you age, by nature, you're forced to go more and more within. Because your ability to act without becomes more and more restricted. And right up to the point of death. Anyone ever seen anyone dying? Anyone ever seen anyone on their deathbed? You haven't had that experience. Well, when you do, you'll see that they just become more and more internal. Because the ability not only to interact, but to even be cognizant of the external world diminishes. And then one is just left with whatever one has developed in one's life, in one's inner life. You know, and if it's been neglected, then one gets very anxious. But if it's been cultivated, then one knows exactly what to do. Just turn more and more to Krishna. That's why devotees leave this world very wonderfully. Even the hospice workers notice the difference. You know, where devotees are really good. We're really good at 2 things. Cooking and dying. I mean, outstanding. So devotees know how to leave this world. They become more and more internal. And in the first canto, there's a beautiful description of Bhishma's departure. At one stage in that description, Sukadeva Goswami describes how Bhishma is... Bhishma says, I used to see all living entities according to their bodies. Some is better, some is inferior. But now I don't see that anymore, Krishna. I only see you. So this is the stage of the Mahajanas, the highly advanced devotees. And it begins by being respectful to every living entity, even the roaches. You know, this is the beginning of Madhyama Adhikari. And that opens the door then to more and more blissful realizations, life-altering realizations, where there's a sustained, high, blissful experience of Krishna consciousness called bhava, which is a preliminary stage of prema, where you just become absolutely nuts, you know, for Krishna. So this is how Lord Brahma begins his teachings to the demigods, his response. See all living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels. And know, he's saying that Krishna cares about every one of them equally. Every living entity has a unique way of pleasing Krishna. Isn't that amazing? Every single living entity, there's no two alike. Every living entity has a unique way of bringing pleasure to Krishna. This is God. He expands himself unlimitedly, so every one of his parts and parcels can bring him pleasure in some distinctive way. Amazing, huh? So therefore, every one of those parts and parcels is dear to him. You know, there's 100 trillion living entities just in your body alone. 100 trillion living entities. Millions of times the population of the whole earth in one human body. Just one insignificant planet, you know, in one insignificant universe. How many living entities? It's absolutely mind-boggling. And every one of them brings Krishna pleasure in a unique way. So our job as Krishna servants is to find out how we can facilitate that arrangement, it's to help this living entity bring some pleasure to Krishna. So, all right. Any reflections on this? Any thoughts or questions? Yes, Puna.
You were saying that a Madhyam Adhikari should be our goal, and I understood the reasoning for that, but I never heard that before because I thought Uttama Adhikari was our goal. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yes, the Uttama Adhikari is a level of advancement that will come naturally to the Madhyama Adhikari. But the Kanishta must scrupulously understand and strive for the position of Madhyama. You know, this will automatically reform our character. The problem is we think that we're more advanced than we are. You know, I mean, the basics of bhakti are pretty easy, right? Pretty much if you can get up early, you got it down. Chanting japa and learning the prayers and learning the instruments and, you know, come in and after a few weeks or a few months or a couple of years, pretty much got it all down, you know. And we feel, okay, well, that was easy. Then we tend to think, well, what's wrong with these other devotees? You know, this is so easy. I must just be so much more intelligent than they are. It's called the PDS. You heard of this? It's a pure devotee syndrome. So somebody who's very new to Krishna consciousness, as a Kanishta, they think they're more advanced than they are. They don't really understand the process. So Rabindra Sarup Prabhu put it very nicely. So you take up Krishna consciousness, you become a pure devotee, and then you become a human being. So when we get past the pure devotee syndrome, then we understand what respectful dealings with others actually means. Then we can go to the Madhyama platform. But that requires us to be very reflective and to consider how are our relationships with other devotees? How do we behave? You know, our behavior will actually establish religious principle. Okay, so that's as they say, that's within our ability or our circle of influence. We can, by effort, by commitment, by determination, by enthusiasm, by careful following of the regulative principles, rise from Kanishta to Madhyama. And the difference between a Madhyama and an Uttama is really only perceivable to an Uttama Adhikari. One of my godbrothers suggested we should invent an Uttameter that would distinguish, like a Geiger counter, you know, if you get close to an Uttama Adhikari, it will go off. But you really can't tell, you know. Only another Uttama, Prabhupada said, can recognize an Uttama. So that is a more subtle transition, but it is our goal.
So I guess my reflection is just that just really helps me kind of change my perspective in Krishna consciousness as well, because if that's the goal, that we can relate to other people on the same platform and inquire from them and also listen to them, versus I just have to be more advanced than everybody else, mm-hmm. Then I think we would just be better as a society if we all remember that.
Yes. Even the Queen of England, when she visited the devotee school, the children sang that verse for her, Trinadapi Sinichina. And she asked, what does that mean? And someone told her, and she said, wouldn't that be lovely? Queen Elizabeth appreciated that. All right. Other reflections? Comments?
So when you were saying that we should have some genuine interest in other people, even if it like appears to be mundane, and I always wonder this myself, just dealing with certain people, especially like my family, how to like, is there like certain points where like, as like, even though a person may seem to us as like an assort person, is there discrimination within that relationship? So that maybe there are certain points where I should avoid their association, but other points where, you know, because their mind is changeable, there's certain points where I should associate with them. Mm. Like, do you see what I'm saying?
Yes. That's a very, it's very challenging to associate with our family members properly because there's a lot of other emotional things going on. You know, some devotees like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were very fortunate to be born in families of devotees. You never have this kind of conflict, but if, you know, generally the family members will be seeing us in a very possessive way because we're part of their network of sense gratification. So they won't like Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it's the best strategy is just to avoid the discussion. And if the family members say, well, you know, they make some disparaging remark about Krishna consciousness directly or indirectly, like about meat eating or something, like how do you live without it? You just say, when you say things like that, I feel like being away from you. Just say how you feel. And then they will tell you by their behavior if they value your company or not. If they avoid those sensitive topics that you've expressed to them, then they're treating you respectfully, you can treat them respectfully. But if they're driving at home, then you have to leave.
Well, although, you know, I'm very fortunate that my parents are devotees, I've actually dealt with a lot of extended family in this situation. And I think I had a realization a few years ago in that the way we interact with them reflects on the process that we follow. Now, if they see us as extremists, they'll never, you know, extreme or super strict, rigid, or, you know, doing something crazy. They'll never even consider Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
So just by dealing with them normally and respectfully, I feel reflects much better upon, and I came to the conclusion for me that it was the best way to be able to preach to them.
Yes.
Because I can never preach to them, you know, using our philosophy. They won't, it won't process for them coming from me.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to sit down and watch a movie, you know. Oh, I don't want, you know. No, sit and watch the movie with them. Talk about it with them. Ask them what they thought about it. You know. Is it, oh no, I'll fall into my, no. This is my, what's Maya is to say, oh, I'm better than you. You know, then they feel fanatic and they think badly about Krishna consciousness. I mean, you don't want to, it's very difficult to stay for an extended period with non-devotees. So those visits should be brief, but when they're going on, we should be respectful, right? You've found that. You know, it's amazing, Prabhu, but I've seen over the years that the devotees who get all this flack from their families initially, over a period of decades, become the pillars of their families because they stick with their spiritual life and they're able to give shelter, and the family members come to appreciate them very much. Often they deal with substance abuse. And I'm talking about very well-to-do families. You know, other members of the families go through all kinds of difficult material situations, and then they see the wisdom, or at least appreciate the purity of their family member who's a devotee. You have to be very patient, very patient. Remember, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sat for 7 days. Actually, I was thinking, why don't we just extend this class for 7 days and we can all practice? Yeah, the relationship is always more important. If we prize the relationship and we let the other considerations be secondary, then we're acting on the Madhyama platform. We just want this person to be respected, and then they will respect Krishna consciousness. If they feel respected, then they will like us. They'll appreciate Krishna consciousness. They say, this movement is making ladies and gentlemen. Prabhupada was asked when he went to Gainesville, how do I tell your true follower? Yeah, very good question, the reporter asked. And Prabhupada said, my true follower, he could have said, you know, chants japa or reads my books, or my true follower is a perfect gentleman or lady. A perfectly behaved person. That's a symptom, Prabhupada said, of a true follower. So it's very nice of your relatives to make sure that you do have this experience in spite of your parents being devotees. Okay, anything else? So should we continue for 7 days or just stop here? We'll stop here? Okay. All glories to Prabhupada. Arigato. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.